Hi, I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. As you may have noticed, there's been a television renaissance over the last 10 years. And I'm not talking about streaming. I'm talking about the golden age of black television. Innovative shows like Issa Rae's Insecure and Donald Glover's Atlanta and Michaela Cole's I May Destroy You. Bethany Butler is an authority on this golden age. She's a former television and pop culture reporter for The Washington Post. She's also the author of Black TV, 5 decades of groundbreaking television from Soul Train to Blackish and beyond. Bethany takes us behind the scenes to explore the rich and pioneering history of black television, including the innovative sitcom Julia. Diane Carroll starred and was the first black woman to lead a primetime network show. Diane was also the first black woman to be nominated for an Emmy. Bethany also writes about the pivotal 70s miniseries Roots and 90s black sitcoms like Living Single, which was there for you a year before Friends. As Bethany points out, Friends may not have existed if it wasn't for Living Single. She joins us now to cover as much as we can and explains how she defines black TV.
Black TV to me, especially right now, is television shows that center black experiences, that center black people. And certainly now those shows are helmed by black creators and people who have lived those experiences. I think it gets complicated early on when we're talking about shows that weren't created by black people, but that were supposed to reflect their lives. And so it gets a little complicated when we talk about that because, of course, we have to include Julia, we have to include Norman Lear's Slate, but we have more sort of authentic black television today, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The first show you write about is the 1968 sitcom Julia, which starred Diane Carroll. What made Julia such an important show?
Julia, I say in my book, it was the first TV show to feature a black family. And of course, we're talking about a single mother and her son. But in terms of going into someone's home and seeing their day-to-day lives, that was Julia. Julia was the first TV show to really do that.
So you think we should give you employment because you are the widow of a war hero, huh?
Certainly not. I think you should hire me because I am a competent RN. I have had 4 years' experience in surgery, emergency, and psychiatric cases. And I am dedicated to my profession and skilled in it. And what's more, I can handle even the most exacting demands of a mean, gruff old man with the heartwarming manners of a wounded moose.
How did viewers react to this pioneering show?
So I think on one hand, they recognized that it was groundbreaking. There had never been a character like Julia, you know, a successful nurse taking care of her son, being the head of her family. There was recognition that it was groundbreaking, but there was also some debate about whether it truly reflected, you know, the black experience or a black experience, because the writers were all white. The creator, Hal Cantor, was white. And so, you know, Diane Carroll found herself in the position of having to, like, feeling a responsibility for her community and feeling the need to speak up and say, I don't think we would say this. I don't think this makes sense. And I think we see that pattern develop over the course of, you know, the last few decades.
Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, there was some criticism about Julia, especially the fact that it presented a white, or the idea that it presented a whitewashed view of black life. Do you agree that's the way those episodes play out?
Yeah, I mean, and certainly in retrospect, you know, we're talking about 1968. It was an intense time in American history and the civil rights movement. That was not reflected on Julia. It was really, you know, about a day-to-day and about her life with her young son, which is fine, but I think that to be that groundbreaking and not speak to some of the things that were happening in the country at the time that would have been on the hearts and minds of black people, that was where the show fell short.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very well said. Let's talk about the great comedian and actor Flip Wilson. His groundbreaking variety show premiered in 1970, and Flip had the business savvy to broker a very advantageous deal. Can you tell us about that?
Right. So Flip Wilson, he had a special in the late, in 1970, he had a special called the Flip Wilson Special, and it did so well that, as was predicted by, you know, media columnists, he ended up getting his own show. And he, as part of that deal, he wanted to own his show. That was unprecedented at the time for a Black creator, and really rare just in general for late night, that he would completely own the show and have such a such an important role in determining what the show felt and looked like.
Mm-hmm. Viewers loved Flip's character, Geraldine Jones, which had Flip dressing up in drag. Do you think Geraldine would play with today's audience?
I'm not sure. You know, we know that there's been an ongoing debate about Black men dressing up as Black women, especially around SNL, where it becomes like a representation issue. You know, what was interesting about Flip and Geraldine was that he was very intentional about not making her a derogatory character. He didn't want to disparage women. He was very clear about that. That was not part of the joke for him. It wasn't like to make her look silly or anything. It was just that she was such a character and such a memorable character. Geraldine had like magazine covers on her own or opposite Flip, which I thought was really interesting.
Ray Charles in person. You know, I never thought I'd see the day when I'd be sitting next to the greatest blues singer of all times.
Ah, that's very kind of you, but who do I have the pleasure of talking to?
Beautiful young chick named Geraldine Jones.
I don't think it's possible to discuss Black TV without talking about the 1977 miniseries Roots. What impact did Roots have on television?
I mean, even now when we talk about miniseries and these sort of collective water cooler moments, Roots really stands out. And it was the first time that Americans saw firsthand, sort of on screen, the horrors of slavery. You know, looking back, 1970s technology, it may not seem that way now, but certainly, you know, it painted a brutal picture of slavery, and it sort of forced America to sit down and watch it. And really, everybody was watching Roots, and everybody was talking about Roots in 1977.
She nice says, take me from my home and bring me to this place. The only time I get to be free is when I run away. I tell you, Fiddler, sometimes it seems like being alone and being free, you're all the same for a slave.
You don't be free. You be dead.
Then I be free.
It was so rare to have an ensemble cast that was, you know, mostly Black. Of course, there were famous white actors that were brought in and that were recognizable to everybody. But, you know, thinking back on the names that were in Roots, you know, you have Richard Roundtree, you have LeVar Burton, like so many memorable people who went on to do other important work and are remembered for all of that.
Mm-hmm. And as you point out, ABC and the producers of Roots hired popular, beloved white actors such as Ed Asner, who was famous for playing Lou Grant on The Mary Tyler Moore Show, and Ralph Waite, who played the father on The Waltons. How did these castings affect viewers?
You know, there's a sense that they were meant to sort of soften the blow, if you will, that, you know, here's someone you know to be affable on screen, and here they are being less than, or, you know, they're being violent and brutal, but they felt that the Roots could still reach white viewers that way by showing, you know, memorable faces that people could relate to.
Mm, yeah. The 1990s saw a big movement in centering Black sitcoms. What impact did shows like Fresh Prince, Family Matters, Martin, and Living Single have on audiences and Black creators?
You know, those shows are still so important. I grew up on, you know, those shows. I remember watching The Fresh Prince, Family Matters. Just seeing the power of seeing yourself on TV is so important. And I think those shows did that. And they did it sort of, you know, it wasn't just one show that was on at that time. It was several. There were different families. You know, Family Matters focuses on a working class family in Chicago. The Fresh Prince was about a very wealthy Black family in Los Angeles. So you have this, you have more dynamic characters and family dynamics. And then you just, in general, you start to see more Black people on TV.
Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that you were particularly a fairly big fan of Living Single. Would that be fair to say?
It would be fair to say.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Living Single, I've said this before, it was Friends before Friends was Friends. you know, it was groundbreaking in the sense that the creator, Yvette Lee Bowser, she was the first Black woman to create her own sitcom. And she centered this story around, you know, four dynamic, successful Black women.
It's been a while since we've been out clubbing. And for free shoot, I'm gonna make the most out of this.
Remember how we used to give fake names to the guys who would try to talk to us?
I was Alexis.
I was Dominique, right? Ooh, tonight I'll be Shaquan.
I think we've seen sort of how Living Single didn't get its due in its time in recent years. You know, after it came to streaming, there was renewed attention on Living Single and what it was. And there's also been some discourse about how it, you know, it inspired Friends.
Issa Rae was the first Black woman to create and star in a premium cable series, Insecure, which premiered on HBO in 2016. What's your take on Insecure?
Insecure holds a special place in my heart. As a Black millennial, you know, that show really spoke to me. And I remember first becoming aware of Issa Rae when she had her internet series, Awkward Black Girl. And that in and of itself was a moment because people saw her telling her story through her own words and her own perspective. And it felt fresh and rare, and it was at the time. She sort of, I think, created a hunger for a show about young Black women. You know, it's almost like you don't know what you're missing on screen until you see it.
You want to go somewhere else?
No. I just need alcohol, and they have it here, so I'm good. Money doesn't hurt. I'm not embarrassed.
No, you shouldn't be at all.
I hate you.
Prosecco with a splash of whiskey.
Oh, that's not my drink anymore, actually.
What? Since when?
Since I discovered vodka and Prosecco.
Damn. Mm-hmm. Okay. All right, well, I'll send it back.
Whoa. Chill. I'm still gonna drink it. Just let the record show I've changed.
Based off that fall? Hell no.
Growing up, I didn't realize how few characters, you know, there were certainly more than there were in the 60s and 70s, but nowhere near the diversity and volume of Black characters that I see now watching TV.
Mm. Just a month before Insecure premiered, Donald Glover brought his series Atlanta to FX. You say that Atlanta pushed the boundaries of TV comedy. How did it do this?
You know, Atlanta, to the very end, from beginning to end, it was really surreal. It was, you know, and I say surreal also, I should note that it, you know, it was grounded in sort of a stark reality. It's about, you know, a young Black man who is from Atlanta. He leaves Princeton University. He leaves it early and he goes back to Atlanta and he tries to make, basically make a way in hip hop, in the hip hop industry for him and his cousin Alfred. And both in terms of the content of that show, what we saw play out on screen, and also how it was staffed behind the scenes. You know, Donald Glover created the show. His brother, Stephen Glover, was head writer. There was a writer's room full of young Black writers who could tell this story in a really layered and nuanced and, I think, unique way.
I know you're probably mad at me. I know you probably think I'm pretty irresponsible, but I'm working on something that I think could be really big for me and you. Yeah, I can explain all of it when I get home. Also, I was thinking maybe you could bail me out, you know, and I could pay you back, you know, and I guess rent money too.
You know, there had been nothing like Atlanta on TV. And I think it spoke to a lot of young Black people. You know, like, I didn't grow up in Atlanta, but I have connections to there. I have family there. And so I think it very authentically reflected that city and sort of its role as like a Black Mecca. But also it was just sort of a slice of life for, you know, a character that, you know, was a young Black man.
What was the biggest challenge you faced while writing Black TV?
That's an interesting question. I think, you know, it was a welcome challenge because I love research, but I think I thought I knew a lot about Black television, and I do, but, you know, I've been writing about it for a few years now. But I think, you know, I didn't really know about Flip Wilson. I hadn't seen much of Julia. So it was kind of like looking back and comparing, you know, maybe things that I had heard other people say, other people who were watching TV at that time, and look at it with fresh eyes and try to, you know, also contextualize it in the time, you know, that there wasn't as much progress as we've had now. But, you know, so to kind of look at all those things and kind of evaluate these shows for where they are, where they were at the time.
Yeah. Bethany Butler, thank you very much for joining us. And thank you for writing Black TV. It's obviously the definitive guide to the history and future of groundbreaking television.
Thank you so much for having me.
Bethany Butler is the author of Black TV, 5 decades of groundbreaking television, from Soul Train to Black-ish and beyond. Find out more at wpr.org/beta. Well, that does it for this edition of Beta. Thanks to our guests, Scott Aukerman, Sam Wasson, and Bethany Butler.
What you're gleaning from these interviews is groundbreaking.
Beta is available to follow on Spotify or wherever you catch your favorite pods. Don't forget to offer a rating or to share your favorite show with new alphas. And you can keep up with us during the week online at wpr.org/beta.
Even for the internet, it's pretty shocking.
Beta is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio and Red Meat Productions.
Fantastic.
Our music and technical director is Steve Gotcher.
Are you sad that somewhere there's a sack not being hackied?
Our executive producer is Adam Friedrich.
Are you hoping that will open doors for other hot idiots?
And thanks to you, our alphas. More Beta comes your way next week. Until then, I'm Doug Gordon.
When you started hosting, you were nervous and sweaty and underprepared and desperate.